Tonight is the sixth of our series of six shiurim on Thursday nights throughout the summer, and we thank everybody for coming out. Many of the people who have come are now on vacation, unfortunately for them, that they're missing out on Rabbi Penner, but really we thank Rabbi Penner profusely for taking up his time and his vacation this summer to come and spend his chachma with us, to come and share his Torah and his wisdom with all of us in our community. It's a great honor. Rabbi Penner is the Dean of Reitz, and he's a very close personal friend and mentor of many of the young students who are here this summer studying in our kollel. So without further ado, we thank once again Rabbi Penner for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure. I got to spend the whole day here today. Unfortunately, got pulled in a few meetings here and there. I didn't get to learn the whole day, but it was really tremendous to see the kollel here. My son Yosef has very, very much enjoyed these couple of weeks. So thank you, Rabbi Schechter, and to everyone from the Young Israel who's made this summer experience possible. It's really been a very, very special thing. I want to do something a little unusual, the last of six shiurim that you're hearing on Thursday nights, to do something a little unusual and to talk about Avodah Zarah. Happens to be that the Kollel, the learning program, whatever we'll call it, has been learning Avodah Zarah. So I wanted to discuss Avodah Zarah in Hashkafa, not Avodah Zarah in Halacha. Discuss Avodah Zarah in Hashkafa, and there's actually not that much in Maseches Avodah Zarah about Avodah Zarah in Hashkafa. There's a little bit here and there, mostly in Halacha, but I wanted to look at this strange phenomenon, what people did for so many years, what brought down the first Beis Hamikdash to worship an idol, to try to understand what it was, why people would do it, where it went, and ultimately whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. That may be sound like a heretical question. I ask you not to leave till somewhere well into the shiur, but triumph, tragedy. What exactly was this change when Avodah Zarah left us? A very famous Gemara that we'll take a look at. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the first source from Sanhedrin Kuf Beis, Rav Ashi Uki Ashlosha Malachim. Rav Ashi was holding by a discussion of the three kings of Israel who will not get the world to come. Yeravam, Menashe, and Achav. He was ready to give the shiur. They were discussing, there aren't that many people. We know the Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Almost everybody gets in. These three kings were so horrible that they didn't get in. So Rav Ashi was about to give the shiur, and look, the time is up. He says, okay, Amar Lamachar Niftach B'chavrin. Tomorrow we're going to start the shiur with our friends. It's not exactly clear why he calls them friends. Maybe he felt that they were also Talmidei Chachamim, but certainly no greater than he. Or maybe it was a cynical kind of comment. He says, tomorrow, and people are really excited, tomorrow we're going to learn the juicy stuff about the few people, the few kings who were so horrible they didn't get to Olam Haba. So tomorrow we're going to start with our friends. Right, a cliffhanger. Right at the end, everybody should come back to tomorrow's shiur. That night he has a dream. Asa Menashe. Menashe, arguably the worst of the three, comes to him that night in a dream. Ischazile Bechalme comes to him in his dream, Amrle, and they have this conversation. I didn't bring you the whole conversation. It's interesting. Menashe asks him a halachic question, a very strange question about where you should start eating a challah, a piece of bread. The simple interpretation of the Gemara is that he asks him a klutz kasha. He says, hey, you think you're so smart, Rav Ashi? I'll ask you a klutz kasha. Rav Ashi doesn't know the answer. He doesn't know the answer. And he turns to Menashe in the dream and he says, you give me the answer and I promise tomorrow I'll say it over in your name in shiur. That must have been some shiur. But then after he gets the answer, after King Menashe is able to answer a shaila that Rav Ashi didn't know, he says, Amar le me'achar dechachimtu kulehai. If you were so smart, my time kapachisola vodos kocham. I gotta ask you this question. How did you fall for idol worship? Come on. You are such a tamachacham. You're such a brilliant guy. How did you fall for idol? What's the deal with this? You worship a piece of wood? You worship a piece of metal? Amrle ihavis hasam havis nakitna bishifule galima verahata to abasrai. He says, trust me, were you there, you would have picked up your long garment and run as fast as you could to get there to come worship idols. Don't judge me, says Menashe. Had you lived in the time of idol worship, had you lived in the time of the first temple, had you lived before that, you would have been running to worship idol. Lamachar amar lahu l'rabbanan. The next day he says, Niftach b'ravusa. He says, okay, yesterday, remember we promised we're going to start with our friends? Let's start with our rabbis. Let's start with the greats. It's a very, very strange and provocative story. Rav Ashi would have worshipped idols. What was this? Why did people start to worship idols? And why, by the time of Rav Ashi, was it absurd? Where he would say to someone, how could you be so dumb? You worship, what are you thinking? So I want to bring tonight a couple of approaches to how idol worship developed, what it was, when it disappeared, and what it meant once it disappeared. And we'll look through a very broad range of Sifrei Machshava, Sifrei Chassidus, to try to understand this idea and to figure out, was it really so good, and what are we missing today in a world that's primarily without idol worship? The Rambam, which is a famous source, the beginning of the Rambam in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, the Rambam says something that doesn't seem to jive well with this Gemara that we just quoted. The Rambam seems to speak of an intellectual or theological mistake. The Rambam says, how did it happen? I don't understand. Adam HaRishon spoke to the Ribono Shel Olam. He knew. He told his kid. He lived for a long time. He don't know. Tell his kids, great, 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 great grandchildren. He heard from the Ribono Shel Olam. Why would anybody make such a mistake? So he explains. Bimei Enosh Tov Bnei Adam Taus Gadol. In the time of Enosh, mankind made a tremendous mistake. It was a mistake. What does it sound like? From the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that it was more than a mistake. You don't necessarily run to a mistake. The Rambam says it was an error. It was an error that people made. V'zeh ayat ha'usam. Amru ho'ol v'ha'elokim barako chavim elu. Digal galim. Lahnehig et ha'olam. Since God made all of these great things, he said, the Rambam assumes that it started with the sun. It started with the stars and the planets. That was the beginning of idol worship. Didn't start with a pesel. Why would anybody think that there's reason to worship a small piece of wood or a small piece of metal? It started with the heavenly bodies. Now that's something impressive. But how did it start? Why would someone think the sun had power? So he says that, they said, listen, since God made these incredibly large and powerful things, v'natnam b'marom, v'chalak lehem kavod, V'hem shamashim ha-mishamshim lefanav. They all serve God. They're so far correct. Since there are these incredible spheres in the heavens, these celestial spheres, and these things serve God, re'uyin heim l'shabcham ulefa'aram v'lachlok lehem kavod. God made them. They're impressive. They serve God. We should not serve them. We should pay honor to them. After all, they're part of God's tremendous world. And it's probably God's wish. God probably likes the fact that those who serve Him faithfully are paid homage by us. That's how it starts. They didn't do this with a piece of wood. They didn't do this with a tree. They looked at things that were so massive, so huge, that seemed to be under God's jurisdiction and that deserved some honor from us. They started making all of these things to give kavod Kedei lahasig ratzon habore. Line number 5 in source 2. Kedei lahasig ratzon habore. In order to make God, yes, God happy. They knew there was God. They knew there was one God. That wasn't a question. Ve'achar sha'archu hayamim amdu nevi'ei sheker. Ve'amru she'akel tziva ve'amar lehem ivdu kochav ploni o kol hakochavim. And then, and it's interesting, according to the Rambam, it wasn't even an honest mistake. Individuals who wanted to take advantage of others said, I heard in a dream, God said, I'd like you now to not just notice them, I'd like you to start worshiping them. I'd like you to start serving them, bringing karbanos to these things. Again, it's coming from God, supposedly. God says, I want my vice president, I want the members of my cabinet to be served by you just like you serve me. But this was intentional. Nevi'ei Sheker said this. Right? Umodia lahem tsura shibada mi libo va'amar zuhi tsurata kochav ploni. Very important. Part of the way that these fake priests, these false priests, took advantage of people was by creating modes of worship that only they knew, because God spoke to them, and said that if you serve this particular small thing, you see, if you're serving the sun, then you don't really have to come to my temple. You don't have to be a member by my shul to serve the sun. The sun is available to everybody. But if I tell you that I was commanded by God that you should serve the sun by bowing down to this statue. And where is this statue? In my shul, in my temple. So it was a control. I'm the only one who knows. I know what God wants. And God wants you to serve somehow this image. Now, mind you, there's nothing in here that suggests that they thought the idol had power in and of itself. It was a way of accessing God. It was a way of accessing these spirits or these great celestial spheres. They didn't think that the idol itself had power. Finally, v'hitchilu kozvim acherim la'amod v'lomar sha'akochav atzmo o ha'galgal o ha'malach diber imahem. The next stage was, you know, you always got to have somebody with a new idea. There were enough people out there who said that God had told them to worship the sun by serving through this particular idol. So somebody had to kind of get business. Everybody was saying that. So one guy says, no, you know what? The sun talked. The sun came to me, and the sun told me that you should worship it with so-and-so. And one thing led to another, till people forgot what it was to worship God. Now, this wasn't an honest mistake. This was the work, says the Rambam, of individuals taking advantage of other individuals, of using religion, using organized religion, as a way of keeping control over people, as a way of making money, whatever it was. What drove the people to do this isn't clear for Rambam. It's, I guess, people want to worship. People want to have a god. People want to come to some sort of a temple. And eventually, they forgot what it meant. They forgot to whom they were supposed to be turning. The Kuzari, in a famous piece, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's Kuzari, right? The Kuzari comes. This is a king. The Kuzari is a king. And he wants to find the right religion, and he goes to check out all different religions, and he finally finds a rabbi who he likes. Rabbis are nice. He finally finds a chaver, he finds the rabbi, and he has this whole theological discussion with the rabbi. And the Kuzari takes a similar sort of approach to what idol worship was, particularly the idol worship that was done by the Jewish people. The conversation that the rabbi is starting to make the Jewish people look impressive. He's trying to use some Jewish history, and he's trying to build up the Jewish religion through the Jewish people. And finally, the king says, I'm no dummy. I know that the Jews worshipped an idol at the foot of Mount Sinai. Right after hearing from God, right after receiving the Torah, the Jews worshipped an idol. How can it be that this is a great people? And the Chaver, the rabbi, in Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's book, answers in a way that ties into what the Rambam just told us. Amar HaChaver, in source number 3. Ha'amim kulam bizman hahu hayu ovdei timunot. First thing you got to know, if you want to look at the earlier generations, if you want to judge even the Jews who sinned at the foot of Sinai, you have to understand that this is what everybody did. He doesn't explain how we got there. Maybe he's relying, so to speak, on the same sort of approach that the Rambam took. He doesn't explain how, in a world where God spoke to the first people, you eventually have people worshiping symbols. But he says, don't judge the earlier generations until you realize this was the only game in town. Everybody worshipped some sort of physical image of some sort. Ve'ilu ba'u filosofim el chachmei uma achat ve'hiviu bifneim ra'aya al achdut ha'eloka ve'al ribonoto. Even if someone would come and prove without a shadow of doubt that this was, that there was a God, and that that God deserved to be served, e efshar hayal chachamim elu b'lo sheyichdu t'muna eleh. They say, fine, you got it. I will jump on your bandwagon. I will join your temple. Show me the symbol. Show me the physical manifestation that we're going to be worshiping. And if they couldn't produce one, it just wasn't religion. Sounds funny to us, but we'll see, it's not so strange. They needed, there was a sense that you had to worship God. You couldn't worship God directly. The way to worship anything was to worship through some sort of a physical manifestation. What am I supposed to bow? I know who I'm bowing down to. But tell me what I'm supposed to bow down to. Where am I supposed to do it? In front of what am I supposed to worship? It was the only way people could think. Yesha hayu miyachsim otan l'makor eloki, kemo sha'anu nohagim kayom b'mkomot ha'mekudashim b'inyanam. Right, we'll see. He says some people used to serve God through a symbol, through bowing down to an image. No one thought, says the Kuzari, that the image was the power. It was a way of focusing. It was a way of accessing something that you can't otherwise access. There's humans, and they're the gods. Some people served God, as we know him, the real God, through an image. So it's interesting. You could worship God or you could worship the sun in the same way. Because just as the sun was just too removed for me to get to, people felt that God was too removed to get to. So you could literally have two people who are bowing down to two images, one serving God and one serving another power. Neither serving the idol. Because they weren't that stupid. They didn't think that this thing that they had just created was actually God. Now, mind you, it was still a little absurd to think that this thing I just created even gives me access to God. Even that is silly, and that may be what was mocked by so many of the Nevi'im. Right? What's mocked by the Navi Ishaya, in other words, and other Nevi'im. You just put this thing together, and now you think, not necessarily you think it's God, but you even think that that suddenly allows you access? But that's what they thought. Kach lo hiskim az ha'amon al shum Torah, Im lo nikshara b'dimyono im tuna muchashit she'efshar l'chaven aleha. There was no such thing as serving God unless you could show me what it is that I'm serving him through. Now, for those of you who are having a little trouble seeing the size of the print, I just want to point out that it was originally the whole size of the page. You can use the bottom for notes if you want, but anyone who... I just want to point that out as we get to the bottom of one page. I don't know what happened in the next time we PDF. Figure out how to get them here. V'hine b'nei Yisrael, af heim hivtiach lehem ki yered aleihem me'im elokad davar ma asher yir'uhu v'yachavnu elav. And the Jewish people are at the bottom of Sinai. They heard God speak. Now they're ready to serve God. What are they waiting for? Give me an object. What's going to be your symbol? Give me your email address, Rabbana. Give me your Twitter feed. What am I using to get to you? Kishem shekivnu b'tzeitam mimitzrayim elamud ha'anan. Now the Kuzari starts pointing out, the Chaver starts pointing out to the Kuzari, that God had been providing this for the Jewish people until now. This wasn't completely an idol-worshipping concept. The Jews had the pillar of fire. They had the cloud. Even within this monotheistic, God has no body, new kind of religion, God was providing certain crutches to them. Shehayu mistaklim bahem u'mechabdim osam u'ponim elem u'mishtachavim nochacham le'elokai yitbarach. They had symbols already, not exactly the kinds of little trinkets that people were worshiping. If you go to the Bible Antiquities Museum, little kind of trinkets that people, right, that they thought that this was going to help them. This was a pillar of fire, but yet it was physical. So they stood there at the bottom of Har Sinai and they waited for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give them something to worship through, some physical manifestation, something they could use. And you know what? He was going to provide one for them. The Luchos. That's what the Luchos were to be. Umoshe ala el hahar, mitoch tzipia leluchos haksuvim asher yorid el ha'am. Unbelievable comment from Rabbi Yehuda Levi. They were going to get what they asked for. God didn't say no. He created them. He knew that they had this need, at least temporarily. Who knows what the ultimate plan might have been? It's interesting. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu break them? Because they created the ego. Now let's see why they created the ego and what happened. Achein ha'am lo chashav klal ki al yedei maise zehu yotzim yavodas Eloah ulahapeth ladatam. He says that the Jews never intended to serve the idol, the calf, any other power. They stood at the bottom of the mountain and they knew that there was only one God. And they wanted to worship him. But they couldn't wait for what? Not for Moshe to come down, but for Moshe to come down with something through which they could worship. Interesting. So what did they do? They made their own. At no time did they doubt that there is only one God and that they had heard him speak to them. But they felt this need that they wanted to worship him, but they needed somehow a barrier. It's interesting. We call it an egel masecha, which also means a mask. They felt, they said, that they were waiting for exactly this. V'lo nechshav lo hadavar le'avon ki im biglal hotziu et acheta am min hakolach al ha'poel. He says, where was the aveira? That they did it themselves, basically. They were allowed. And then what would God give them eventually? A Mishkan. And in the Mishkan, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what would there be? Two golden figurines. Very strange. Our enemies, when they went into the base Kodesh HaKadoshim, they couldn't believe it. This is the Jews who have been telling us What did they do wrong? They made it up themselves. They decided what the image should be. They decided how to do it. But God was always prepared to, on some level, give them some symbol to work through. And then he says, unbelievable. V'hinei ha-maaseh ha-hu muzar u-muguna b'einenu. He goes, I know to us this looks ridiculous. What an embarrassing moment for the Jewish people. Ki bizanenu batla avodat ha-tmunot etzo rov ha-umot. Because today, this is not how people worship. But imagine if instead of making an egel azahav, they built a beis medrash. Imagine if they put an aron kodesh in the front. That would have been equally a problem. That wasn't what God told them to do. But he says that's the equivalent. Don't think that the Jewish people built a golden calf. The Jewish people built a shul. The shul of old was a golden calf. They were looking to worship God. They needed a place that they could feel and they would be directed. V'ilu hayachatatam bazeh shibanu lahem mirutzonam bayit miyuchad. Had the sin been that they made a house for God, v'kavu makom l'tfilatam, and they made a minyan, they made a minyan factory. V'hayu makrivim bo korbanot u'marim l'chvodo, lo haya davar zeh zar be'inenu. That wouldn't have seemed so strange to us. Shekein anachnu noagim kach hayom. Isn't that what we do today? Livnot lanu batei tefillah lefi bechirateinu ulegadel kevodam. We make really big shuls. Uliaches lehem berachot shenisbarcheinu bahen. And some even say that God dwells in them. Ile Elokecha Yisrael. Wow, that's creative. Viewing the sin of the golden calf as simply something we can't understand, but simply looking for the right way to serve God. The powerful message is, you can't necessarily decide by yourself. That seems to be the message. And that is a very powerful message for today, where everyone wants God, but sort of wants to figure out how they want to worship God. Well, that's not a relationship. That's not a relationship, right? That's, you'll excuse me, getting one's wife Jets tickets for their anniversary, right? You have to serve somebody by saying, not how would I like this to proceed, but there's an idea of nullifying oneself. Saying that I want to serve God this way, that was where they made their fault. They jumped the gun by hours. They jumped the gun. Because God was going to provide such a thing. It's because God had told them not to do it. They were well-intentioned. In fact, the Kuzari says, you know how you know they were well-intentioned? Because they asked the Gadol Hador to do it for them. Moshe Rabbeinu was on top. If you want to commit a sin, don't go to Aaron and ask him to help you, right? Think about it. If you want to do a sin, then you get together and you tell the rabbi to step out for a few minutes, and then you don't go to Aaron a Kohen and say, please help us in what we want to do. We want to commit the biggest sin in Jewish history now. Please, Aaron, help us. So yes, he says that, again, given the historic importance and given the fact that God was trying so hard, so to speak, to change the way people thought, this was a historic mistake for the Jewish people. But it wasn't that the Jewish people were worshiping idols per se. And in fact, it may be that many people didn't worship idols, right? Many people who wanted to worship God worshiped in this way. It's interesting that it seems that this is actually what the psukim are telling us in certain places. If you look at a very relevant piece here in the Parshias, Ki Echris Hashem Elokecha, source 4, Es Hagoyim Asher Atav Hashem Elareshes Osam, Mipanecha, when God gets rid of the nations who were there, V'yarashto Osam V'yashavta Beretzam, you're going to come to Israel, He Shama Lecha Pentinakesh Acharehem, Acharehi Shamdam Mipanecha. And what do you know? Why is it so important to get rid of them? Upentidrosh LeElohehem, you shouldn't do research in their gods. Now, I would have thought if the pasuk stops here, it would have said, don't do interreligious studies. Right? Don't try to find a, hey, who do you worship? But that's not what the pasuk says, if you look closely. Lemor echaya avdu hagoyim ha'ela et Elohim ve'esakein gamani. How, what modes do they use of worship, and I will do it. Losa sekein la'shem elokecha. The people aren't being warned here not to worship the sun or the mercury or whatever it is. They're saying when you get to Israel, you're going to start to ask people, I'm going to serve my God. I want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. But can you give me some advice about how I should do it? Which is interesting if you think of shul practices and how some have certainly been picked up from other religions. That's what this is saying. You're going to be serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. But you shouldn't try to do it like they're doing it. You shouldn't say, what are the idols? I'm not going to serve whatever force you think you're serving. I'm going to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. But I'm going to do it through the symbol. From the Rambam and from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, we begin to understand that idol worship wasn't what we thought it was. These two opinions at least certainly feel that people understood there was nothing to Avodah Zarah. It wasn't in of itself, in other words, there wasn't a reason to serve a different power ultimately. The people who were in the know, the Jewish people, knew that there was only one God, and it was a question of how exactly am I going to access him. Whether that's true for all of Jewish history is not so clear. When you go further into the Navi, it's not always clear that the Jewish people were looking to access the Ribbono Shel Olam only. But that was at the heart and the root of Avodah Zarah. A similar source says in Sanhedrin Samach Gimel, Amar Rav Yodin Hayu Yisrael Ba'avodas Kochavim She'ein Ba'mamish. Famous Gemara says that, come on, the Jewish people knew there was no, there was nothing to it. V'lo avado elo lahatir lahem arayot. A very different idea. The Jews were looking to sin. They were looking to sin. They didn't really doubt God, but they were looking for the freedom that denying God would give them. A different kind of approach, but not so different in the sense that people understood that this was not the real way. They understood intellectually that this was ridiculous. This didn't make any sense. They knew that there was a God. However, it was much more convenient. They couldn't live with the cognitive dissonance of sinning and believing God. And this is certainly something that we do see sometimes when people who develop questions. Certainly, there are many questions that are real questions and questions that dog people, and questions are okay and questions are normal. But we have probably all come encounter with people who have questions, and one wonders, is it really the questions? Or are the questions an excuse for living perhaps a certain way? Whether we take the Rambam, whether we take Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, whether we take this interesting comment in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we begin to understand the tricks that people played, the beliefs that they had. It was a faulty belief system in one way or another. However, and here's where the shir gets a little juicier, it doesn't sound like the original Gemara that we started with is talking about an intellectual mistake. It doesn't sound like it's talking about people who were trying to use Avodah Zarah as an excuse for something else. The king Menashe turns to Rav Ashi and says, you would be the first one out of the gate. Well, certain sources try to deal with Avodah Zarah in a more rational way. It's very difficult to say that that's the only way to approach Avodah Zarah. There's a very interesting piece in the Shiurei Das of Rav Blach of Tels. Rav Blach has a very interesting essay called Shiur Koma, the extent to which we're our height. How great are we or low are we spiritually? The Gemara tells us that Adam HaRishon used to go all the way up to the Shemayim. And then when he sinned, he was lowered. Mankind, he says, used to be at a higher level and not a lower level. And he says something which is very troubling. He's actually, his essay itself is really dealing with Parshas Balak, the whole Bilam episode. Well, we know we sit with great tension during the Parsha to find out if Bilam is going to succeed in cursing us. Oh, that would be terrible. And he's about to utter a curse. Whew. And we're able to function. You know, all people are all sweating during the laning there. That he's going to utter a curse against the Jewish people. Baruch Hashem, he comes out with Matovu Alecha Yaakov. Says Rav Blach. So if he would have cursed, what would have been the big deal? It looks like from the narrative that the Jewish people are in real trouble if this man utters a curse. It seems to be the pashtus in the Pesukim. That if he utters a curse, the Jewish people have real challenges in front of them. Rav Blach says, what is that? What is that all about? Rav Blach says that there's more to this whole Avodah Zarah thing than just an intellectual mistake. The reason why we can't understand why Bilam was such a threat is because we don't understand what's really going on up there. We don't understand that Avodah Zarah is based on some very powerful ideals, not just an intellectual mistake, not just a lie that somebody told. If the whole thing about the forces of evil and the celestial forces was a lie that somebody made up, so why can't we let Bilam curse us out night and day? He says, you know why we don't worship Avodah Zarah today? Because we're not smart enough. We're not aware enough of what these powers are in the world. Couldn't be much further away from the Rambam. The Rambam, who says this was a mistake, started as a mistake, led to a bunch of lies, but there are many sources that seem to indicate that there was something else there. Maybe it's still here and we don't understand it. Maybe somehow it disappeared. Maybe we don't have access to it anymore. But Avodah Zarah was more than just a bad mistake that got repeated. And it was more than just a belief that I needed something in order to get to God. It was more than an intellectual mistake. And so says the Maharal in his commentary to that Gemara on which we started. Uki Agimel Malachim, source number 6. Uritzono lomar ki Rav Ashi hayasover ki hayu to'im acharei Avodah Zarah. What was Rav Ashi's question in source number 1? If you're so smart, how could you be so dumb? Comes King Menashe and says, I'm smarter than you. We didn't do this because we were dumb. We were brilliant. V'lo haya davar hazeh mishum shehaya yitzram hara goverbam. That's what Rav Ashi thought. Rav Ashi didn't think this was a yetzer. It wasn't a desire. What does it mean? Why would I have a desire to worship? What does that even mean? A desire. That's what he thought. He thought they were just stupid. They were just primitive. Rak bishvil shelo yu chachamim kol kach. V'lekach ta'u acharei avodah zarah. V'heshiv lo kidover ze eino. Said Menashe. Before you give shiur tomorrow, I got to correct this mistake. We are not stupid. Ki chachamim hayu. Rak bishvil she yitzram haya gover al haseichel. But we had a passion. It was a real thing. We had a desire, a need to worship idols that overrode what we thought. How could that ever be? Oh, come on. People make very bad mistakes in a passionate state. They know rationally that it doesn't make any sense and that it's going to lead ultimately to their downfall. That's what happened to us. The ilu haya ba'oto dor haya ratz achareah v'haya nakit b'shvila glima. Listen to what he says. And he would pick up his coat. Why that image? Why does it say you'd pick up your cloak in order to run? Ki kasher hachote chacham, v'yodea asher hu chote, rak shehu eino yacholim sho al yitzro. If a person was smart, but they had an urge they couldn't control, who chafetz ve'ohev shi'avolo minia ad shelo yuchal lichtov. If Menashe was wearing the long garment, he wouldn't pull it up. Because he says, I wouldn't have pulled up my cloak because I know it was wrong. I'm not stupid. I know that this won't help. I hope I'll trip. I hope I'll trip. I'm hoping something will stop me along the way. I feel this tremendous urge. I can't control myself. I wish something would happen. If I were there, says Menashe, I would have left my cloak down. When I ran with my cloak down because I knew I didn't want to do this. But I felt a drive pulling me to do it. You, Rav Ashi, you're not even smart enough to leave down your cloak. You would pull your cloak up and run full speed. I wasn't stupid. I just couldn't control myself. None of us could. Ki ein ata, the last line, chacham kol kach kmohem. Umize teida ki chachamim gedolim hayu. Says the Maharal, they were great people, intellectually. They knew. They were the rabotai. They were the rabbis, so to speak. Rak bishvil shahaya yitzra Moshe l'alayim. But they had this incredible yetzer hara to worship an idol. And that's where we get to the heart of trying to understand this idea of what Atam Yisara is. What in the world does it mean that I have a desire? I can't help myself. I'm going to worship an idol. What is that? How can we relate to that? One way I think to relate to it is, has there ever been a superstition that you knew didn't make any sense, but you didn't want to violate it anyway? Right? You don't believe in a crack on the thing. You don't believe that if you do this or if you make the red light, but you're afraid, right? You're caught in this trap. There is a semblance of it still there. I can intellectually know one thing, and I can be driven to do it. But let's try to understand it better. There's a famous Gemara that appears in two places, both in Maseches Sanhedrin and Maseches Yuma. We'll learn the version in Maseches Yuma. There's slight differences. The fascinating story of the end of idol worship. The end of Avodah Zarah. And you kind of got to ask at some point in this story, if it was so easy to get rid of the whole thing, then why didn't they ever do it before? Well, we'll see. Turn to the last page. Sefer Nehemiah. Most people don't ever get up to Nehemiah. Way, way, way at the end of Tanakh. Bayesheni. You know, Bayesheni was a very, very difficult time because the Jewish people hadn't really done tshuva by Bayesheni. The generation that stood there at Bayesheni understood that they really hadn't been brought back because they fixed the problems. They were brought back because God said he was going to bring them back. He promised that in 70 years the exile would end, and in 70 years it did end. And it's very possible, and many suggest this, that Bayesheni was necessary in order to get the Jews to Woodmere in 2015. That had the temple experience, had the Israel experience ended after Bayis Rishon, we wouldn't have made it 2,500 years to today. We needed a buffer. We needed an extra boost, so to speak. We needed a boost. We needed another 400 some odd years in order to prepare us for a 2,000 year exile. Whatever the reason was for the Bayesheni, the Jewish people understood as they stood there in front of a very shvach habayis, when we think of Bayis Sheni, we think of Herod's Bayis, which was way at the end of Bayis Sheni. It's a very shvacha building. We all know the famous story. The people are crying. The older people, look at the young people, are so excited. Look what we built. The older people, you know, have no idea what the Beis HaMikdash used to look like before it was destroyed. So there was a real fear. There was a real fear, because if Zaidi, if Al-Dazaidi wasn't good enough to keep the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed, and the Jewish people to be exiled, then how? What's the point of this whole thing? I'm going to build the thing? We haven't fixed the problem. Vayitzaku al Hashem Elokim b'kol gadol. And there's a story where the people are crying out to God. It's not at all clear from the story in Nehemiah, according to Pshat, what is going on. But this is what's understood in the Gemara. My Amor, what were the people saying? Amar Rav, bye-bye. Bye-bye. And we'll see, it is a story about bye-bye, but bye-bye doesn't mean goodbye. Bye-bye means gewalt. Oy gewalt. Hainu hai da achrive le mikdasha vikalya le hechale. The same thing. The number one yetzer, the desire to worship idols, which grandpa couldn't stop, and I don't think I can stop. The cause of the destruction of the first temple, the Kayale Chali, it caused the burning of the Heichal, the Katlina Lukuli Tzadiki, and it called all the people to be killed. Tzadikim, we're not even Tzadikim, this is ridiculous. The Aglinu Yisrael Me'aron, and it caused the Jewish people to be exiled from their land. The Adayin Merakeh Beinan, and it's still here, dancing in front of us. We're hopeless. We're hopeless. We have this very same desire. What's the point of a second temple? We know, very interesting line, that it was only given to us to give us reward. The desire to worship idols was given to us in order for us to benefit from it. I guess the simple interpretation is that, but it's a very difficult theological concept, is God created these bad urges so we could overcome them and earn schar. He put in an obstacle course. He made it more difficult. He made it challenging for us. It's only here. We'll see if that really holds up till the end. Klum yahavtalon el kibule be'igra. This was only given to us. The desire to worship idols was given to us so we could get a certain reward. Lo iyu ba'inan velo agre ba'inan. Forget about it. It ain't worth it. It's not worth it. Forget about all of the good that comes from the desire to worship idols. And again, let's assume for now that means that I get to overcome it and I get to be a hero. We can't do it. It's just not possible. I forego all of those great moments that I'm going to have overcoming Avodah Zarah, because most of the time I'm going to fail. The question is, it's a very strange request. What was it motivated by? Why did people not think of it before? Was it appropriate for this time? God created it. God created the desire to worship idols. Very strange. Nafalahu pitka mirikia v'havikasav ba'emes. Interesting. They're debating it. And a little piece of paper comes down. And it has on the word it, true. Emes. And most understand what this meant was that, yes, you've hit upon something. Maybe in an earlier generation, it was better to have the desire for Avodah Zarah. And don't doubt yourselves. You're probably right. Emes. Interesting. Osivu betanisa tlasa yomenu tlasa lelusa. They fast for 3 days and three nights. Umasru nilo. And the avoda, the Yetzer Hara to worship idols was given over to the Jewish people. They don't know what to do with it right now. But they had it in their hands, so to speak. And then, Nafak Osa Kiguria Denura, mi beis kodshei HaKadosh. And it came out as a fiery lion from the Holy of Holies. They prayed, take this tremendous desire that we all have to worship idols that's killing us, that brought down the Jewish people, and give it over to us. And I can imagine the whole Jewish people start looking out to Azazel. They start looking towards the Jordanian border to see where from Azazel this spirit, this whole thing is going to come from. And suddenly he says, look! And a lion, the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah, comes out of the Holy of Holies. Amar Lei Navi, Rashi says this is the Navi Zechariah, Yisrael, Hainu Yetzer d'Avodah Zarah, behold, the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah is a fiery lion that came out of the Holy of Holies. Bahadei de Tafsu Alei, can imagine the debate that, okay, who? Okay, let's go get it. Okay, you go get it. Right, let's capture it. Somebody. Capture it with what? So that's a very interesting story. They pull out one of its hairs from the mane, and it starts to roar, and they're worried that God is going to take pity on it and put it back. And then they're trying to figure out what to do with it. It's obviously a lot of allegory here. They put it in a big lead pit, a big lead pot, and they seal it, and it's gone. And that's it. After centuries of the Jewish people being weighed down by Avodah Zarah because of this intense desire to do it, they prayed, God said okay, and he gives them the Yetzer Avodah Zarah and they lock it up forever. And then an amazing thing happens. Somebody says, hey, we're on a roll. Who knew it was so easy to get rid of the Yetzer Hara? Why stop here? There are other things that brought down the Jews in the first temple. We know that it wasn't just Avodah Zarah. It was Gili Arias. It was the desire for forbidden marital relations. So they said, hey, let's just get rid of all Avodah Zarahs. Let's just go for it. And then we don't have to worry about anything else ever again. We'll never be exiled. Amru hol ve'es ratzon hu, unbelievable Gemara, nibay rachme ayitzra da'aveira. Let's now pray for the end of the Yetzer of Aveira, which is a way of saying the Yetzer to have marital relations. Bo rachme ve'emser biyadayu. Unbelievable. They prayed, and God, it doesn't say where this one came from, but God sent them a manifestation of the desire for physical relations, and they got that too. Amar lehem chazu d'ikatlisu le'lahu kalya alma. And they're about, somebody has the knife up here, I don't know what this one looked like, and they're about to kill it, and somebody says, whoa! Probably the Navi Zechariah. Whoa! Don't wipe this one out so fast. We need this one for the world to continue. It's not going to be good if we don't have this. We need some of this. So they said, okay, we'll have a waiting period. Chavshuhu t'losa yomi. They locked up the bizarre Gemara. They locked up the Yetzer Hara for marital relations for 3 days. Ubai beyasa bas yoma b'chol Eretz Yisrael. And they then sent out messengers to see if chickens were laying eggs. Were chickens even laying eggs? V'lo ishtakach. The world was about to cease. The desire for procreation had stopped amongst all creatures, and eggs were no longer being laid. And they saw that the world was going to come to an end. Amri hechi navid. So what a historical moment. What should we do? Nakdalei? Should we kill it? Kalya alma. If we destroy the desire for marital relations, then the world will end. Nibai rachme apalga. Said, I got a better idea. Let's have it. I don't know who came up with that formula. Let's have it. What does Rashi say? Have it. Let's make it just strong enough for one's wife, but not strong enough for anybody else. Palga berikia lo yave. That's not the way it works. It's not the way you can't do that. You can't be so precise to be able to cut it in half. Kachlinu le'enei they blinded one of its eyes, whatever this creature was, vishavku, and they left it and they let it go back. Ve'ahani, delo migri beila inish bekrivta. That's where the taboo of incest comes from. Before that time, there was even a desire for incest. They were able to chip away just a little bit that there's certain people that it just seems like that doesn't make any sense. It's a fascinating comparison. It's a fascinating comparison. And if you'll excuse me for being PG-13, it's fascinating to compare incest with the way we look at idols once the Yetzer Hara for idol worship is taken away. In other words, it's hard to understand what does it mean that the desire for marital relations was taken away, so it wasn't so strong. But, I mean, we need to procreate. No. When the desire for the Yetzer Hara was taken away, what was left was taboo. What was left was incest. What was left was disgusting. In other words, just like by idol worship, when the desire was taken away, it seemed the most absurd thing to do. So too, when a little bit of that desire for physical relations was taken away, what was left was, why would anyone want to do that? One is not more natural, seems the Gemara to say, than the other. They're both due to something that was put in us, which is difficult to understand. Why should people be so desirous? Why should people have such tavas? What about it objectively? There's something that drives us, and it's incredibly powerful. But it's a drive that we have. And once the drive is taken away, what's left in its wake is, why would anybody do this? And so, that day, they ended the desire for Avodah Zarah. It was basically wiped out, at least in the Jewish people, basically wiped out. And the desire for physical relations, which seems to be compared to it, is lessened in a very small way. What is this desire? The Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to Seder Olam Rabbah, the Vilna Gaon makes a single comment that opens up an entire world for us. And you may have heard this comment before. I want to try to explain and understand what it means. The Vilna Gaon says, in a very cryptic way, when the desire for Avodah Zarah was removed, so was prophecy. And we know that prophecy dies out at the time of the Second Temple, at the beginning of the Second Temple period. It is very strange. Whatever it is that was so overwhelming that it caused the destruction of the First Temple barely exists at all in the Second Temple within the Jewish people. It just disappears, just goes away. What happened? Pasuk in Amos, which is used as a song of good, it's really not a good song. Hine yamim ba'im vishlachdi ra'av ba'aretz, right? That's the famous old song. I'm going to send a hunger to the land. It's not a hunger for food. It's a hunger to hear the words of our Ribono Shalom. It's so nice. Everybody wants to come and become balei tshuva. No, that's not what the Pasuk means. The Pasuk means that people will one day wish there was Nevuah again. The word of God will be impossible to find, and people will go from land to land looking for this. What is this? So the Gemara tells us that, in fact, source number 9, Mishemesu, Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi, the last three of the prophets, Nistalka, Ruach HaKodesh, Misrael, Ruach HaKodesh disappeared. Let's try to understand this a little bit. The Gemara compared sexuality to Avodah Zarah. And we know that that happens a lot in the prophets. we speak of an extramarital affair as Avodah Zarah and vice versa. Right? Avodah Zarah, it's always compared. What was it that the Jews said when they wanted to remove the desire for Avodah Zarah? They said, we don't want it's positive because we can't deal with the negative. But when it came to the desire for physical relations, the positive wasn't overcoming the desire so that I could get schar. There were two yitzarim, two very powerful forces put into us. And interestingly, both of them have to do with connecting with another. And when it comes to the desire for physicality, it's not, we don't say, well, God put it in us so that we can get schar if we ignore it. This truth, but God put it in it because without that there wouldn't be a world. It's not that God gave us this desire, one of the most powerful things that drives us. He didn't just give us that desire so that we could overcome it. He gave it to us because it served a very positive purpose. The flip side of it was a terrible aveira. It's a tool. It's a tool. The desire that we have, the physical desire, is a tool to keep people together. It's a tool to build the world. And if not controlled, it can destroy. What is the desire for Avodah Zarah? Sir Tzadok HaKohen understands the Vilna Gaon as saying that the desire for Avodah Zarah is the same desire that allowed me to have prophecy. Now, wait a minute. I know I wasn't going to have prophecy anyway. I'm big loss here. I wasn't going to have prophecy. How many people? There are 49 prophets. How many prophets are there? Not true. The Gemara in Megillah says, source number 10, Harbe Nevi'im Amdu Lehem Yisrael Kiflayim Kiyotze Mitzrayim. The amount of people that came out of Egypt, twice as many people became prophets. What? Wow, did I learn nothing in high school? There were 1.2 million prophets. I didn't even get through Trei Asar. El Nevua Shehutzrachu L'Doros Nechtava. The prophecies that were needed for later generations were written down, and the others weren't written down. What did those other 1.2 million people do? They had an intense spiritual experience. They had an experience that people travel all over the world today still to find that experience. Prophecy wasn't a way to hear from God. It was a way to be close to God. Once that you were close, he could give you messages that you would send to other people. But that wasn't what prophecy was about. A lot of people wanted prophecy. We know the process of prophecy. You have to leave your house for a couple of weeks, and you have to stay in meditation, and then you get to this, it's meditation. Eastern, what we call Eastern religion, is much of it is Judaism. It was an intense spiritual experience of being alone with God. That same desire, and it had to be a desire, because you know what I had to give up? In order to want to do that, I'd have to give up a couple of weeks, I'd have to meditate, I'd have to take everything else in my life and say, I'm putting you aside in order to make this one close relationship. But I wanted it so badly. I wanted that high. The closest thing they say today to Nevuah is Hashem Hu Elokim at Yom Kippur. Feel a little something. It's almost a physical pleasure. You're going geared up. I'm going to feel this at the end of Yom Kippur. It's that feeling of being uplifted, the feeling of being with the Ribbono Shel Olam. People had this incredible desire to do that. And that very same desire was the desire for Avodah Zarah, and let me explain why. Because a human being can't naturally be in the same place as the divine. What I'm going for is impossible.
There's no way that I can be a human, I can be physical, and I can connect with the spiritual. I want it so badly. I want to forge that relationship. There's two ways to do it. Either I could spend weeks and years working on myself to become spiritual like he, or I could bring him down to the earth in my hand and make him physical like I am. Idol worship was a desire to be able to touch God. There are two ways I can do that. One is filled with tremendous difficulty, tremendous dedication, tremendous sacrifice, tremendous lessening of myself, tremendous giving up who I am in order to be able to forge a relationship with another. And one is cheap and easy and about me. The Jewish people said, I can't handle it anymore. I need to be so close to God that I'll do anything. I'll create this image, this idol. It's not that I understand that it goes beyond, but I need to be with it. I need that rush. I need the cheap spirituality. And the Jewish people finally said, I can't handle it. But with the removal of the desire to worship idols came the removal of the desire to have prophecy. The people were relieved of that need to be so close and intimate, and yes, I'm using that word, intimate with the Ribono Shel Olam. And suddenly prophecy stops after millennia. There's no more prophecy. Because it's lifted from the Jewish people. They say, we don't want it and we don't want its benefit. Not just reward, but benefit. Just like the desire for physical relations had a benefit. It wasn't just something I had to overcome. It was a powerful tool that allowed for what? An intimate relationship based on sacrifice. An intimate relationship based on exclusivity. An intimate relationship based on giving up of myself in order to be just with another. Practically the same Yetzer. One for a human being and one for the divine. And that Yetzer too can be satisfied in a way that requires sacrifice and time. And minimizing myself. And thus can be an unbelievable tool to establish a relationship. Or it can be just about me and cheap. And something I just can't control. It's no wonder these two things find themselves in the same Gemara in Yuma. In the same Gemara as it's repeated in Sanhedrin. Amru biyoma dikashibitluhu anche knesses hagadola amru lo ihu ba'inon velo agre, says the Reb Tzodek HaKohen in Resise Laila, perush agre hashlemus hanimshach mimenu. Not the reward that I would get for ignoring it. It's the heights that I could reach if I had this desire to really be with the Ribono Shel Olam. That would allow me to take off of work for weeks to get into the spiritual state. Not just an intellectual mistake, but a powerful drive that allowed for an intimate relationship with one other to the exclusion of everything else in the world. That was the Yetzer of Avodah Zarah. That's why for all those years they didn't get rid of it. Because of its power, because of its toeles, because of that which it gave us. It is, Rabosai, very difficult for us to relate to either the mistakes that were Avodah Zarah or to the desire that is Avodah Zarah. The comparison to the physical drive gives us just a glimpse. And remember, it's a diminished physical drive that we can relate to. the diminished physical drive that's left in human beings today gives us a little bit of a glimpse as to what it was, as to what this desire was and why people would give up so much in order to get there, and why people would cheat in order to satisfy the drive without the sacrifice needed to make it significant. But even today, and I'll end with this, there is a small remnant of this idea, because we haven't lost our desire for spirituality. We haven't lost our desire to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's nothing like what it used to be. But we haven't lost it completely. But even today, that desire can be filled or fulfilled in different ways. And I'm not talking about necessarily a desire to connect with God, but an inner sense of looking for meaning, an inner sense of looking for something more. I once heard Moshe Weinberger say a very interesting thing. It resonated so much with me because it's just so out of the blue. He said, why do people eat pizza after Shabbos? What's the deal with pizza and Shabbos? I know you can't have pizza on Shabbos. Okay. See, you're not supposed to have pizza on Shabbos. You're fleishik, suddenly you're milchik. It's not the only time in the whole week that we're fleishik. Why do you need to get a piece of pizza on Shabbos? So the fact is, you don't need a piece of pizza, because most people don't order in pizza on Shabbos. They go out for pizza on Shabbos, well, after Shabbos, right? That's what they do. You know, you feel this, Shabbos is over, and now, like, I don't know what that, I gotta go out. I gotta do something. It's Motzei Shabbos. I I'm a shul rabbi for years. I'm just exhausted. I just want to go. No, I gotta go out. It's Motzei Shabbos. What is that about? So one way of looking at it is, listen, you've been trapped home all day. But maybe it's something more. We are, even today, created with a desire to be moved. A desire to be uplifted. We feel an emptiness at certain times in our life. We feel that we want something more. That's what we feel at the end of Shabbos, after having spent 25 hours with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have a desire to take the next step. I feel I'm uplifted. I got a taste of it. My neshama is alive. I want to take the next step. There's two ways to take that step. I can eat junk food, or I can eat nutritious, spiritual food. The food of the soul is to be moved, is to be uplifted, is to be shaken. Maybe that's why today there's such a need for excitement. As our souls come alive again, we're told that towards the end of time, Nevuah will be restored. Our souls will again crave. There's a lot of craving souls out there. And there's also a lot of ways to fulfill that crave. I can actually fulfill it with a horror movie. I can actually fulfill it at great adventure. Why would people spend so much money to be dropped off the side of things? You know, it used to be I would have to commit a crime to be pushed off of the side of something. I pay all this money to go in and to be thrilled. What is that? Why is everyone looking for thrills, whether it's on a screen, whether it's in a palm, whether it's at an adventure? Maybe it's our neshamos hungry again. But that hunger, as with all desires, can be filled in one of two ways. It can be filled with things that are gleaming to the eye, or it can be filled with a sense of meaning. The meaning path is always going to require sacrifice. It's always going to have a reward that's going to be weeks away, years away. If it brings immediate reward, immediate satisfaction, it's probably not using the Yetzer in completely the right way. So we live in a generation, Rabosai, where I don't know whether or not we're once again getting this desire. Strange things are happening in the world. The world is waking up, is becoming radicalized in a certain way. There's something, maybe it is the neshamos of mankind waking up, or maybe it's always been there. But this desire to connect with God in an intimate way is not completely gone. They trapped it. They put it in a bowl. They didn't kill it. It's inside this iron, this lead cauldron of some sort. But it's still there deep down. And it's still calling to us to try to remember that it's only with sacrifice that we can make that relationship. We have to fill that hunger with a desire to get to the Ribono Shalom, because that's what it is, that emptiness, that feeling of lacking of meaning, that feeling of lacking of connection, that feeling of drifting. All of those are desires that were put in us to find the Ribono Shalom. Unfortunately, there's so much else out there that we can find that temporarily deals with that desire, that temporarily fulfills that need. But just like the original desire for Yetzer Hara, the original desire for Avodah Zarah, and the continuous desire for physicality, it's there to serve a purpose. We have to be attuned to our spiritual needs, understand them for what they are, and continue to invest, as every relationship needs, to invest in our exclusive relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. Have a good night. Thank you.